Good afternoon. Welcome to the EcoNews Report. This week, your hosts are from the North Coast Environmental Center, Bella Waters, Admin and Development Director, and Larry Glass, Executive Director. The EcoNews Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, EcoNews. Don't forget you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, we'll be providing brief snippets of current news that pertain to various environmental topics, such as the proposed East-West train, Cherry Heights Casino Hotel project, the asphalt plant approved near Big Lagoon, herbicide use in Eureka, and current climate change news. So, Larry, what's our first story?
Well, first, we're going to start with the big public hearing that just took place up at the Trinidad Town Hall about the environmental assessment that the Trinidad Rancheria and the Bureau of Indian Affairs put forward. It was a pretty well-attended meeting. I would say there were about 50 people in attendance. Mm-hmm. Well, there was two disappointments with it. One, that the BIA had turned down the request for extended comment period time, which is almost routinely granted by federal agencies when they're having a comment period to an EA or an EIS. In this particular instance, they said, nope, no extension of time. The other disappointment was the person running the meeting, City Councilman Susanna, or who was running the meeting for Trinidad, cut the meeting off early, stopped people from asking questions ahead of schedule, and then stopped the public comment, which I thought was not the way to run a public meeting. But I don't know, the people up there elected her. I guess that's their decision, but it didn't seem like the appropriate way to run a meeting. At the Environmental Center, we're certainly concerned about the document that the Rancheria and the BIA put forward. It's an EA instead of an EIS, so it's a much shorter document that doesn't fully look into the complete overview of the effects of this. And so we wrote in, and we have some problems with the document. One of them was that we felt that this project is sort of a piecemeal approach to their overall development. It's clear that the Rancheria has a master plan for developing their site. Mm-hmm. But all we're looking at right now is the hotel. We're not looking at the mini mart, at the trailer park, at the freeway interchange, at all of these connected issues. Right. So we believe for that reason their environmental document is flawed. We also think that there's some serious issues around the visual and scenic resources that everyone that visits Trinidad appreciates, and seeing the sight of a giant glass and steel building looming over Trinidad Bay does not seem to fit with anybody's idea of what should be going on there. We also raise the issue of federal consistency. There's a compact between the Rancheria and the state of California that says that they would do CEQA, and they haven't done that. There should be a full range of alternatives. All there was a build or no build. Right. There wasn't a full range of alternatives. And water was a big issue. You know, they're going to, according to their assumption, which we kind of think is faulty, but they're saying they'd use 7% of Trinidad's water supply from Leffenholtz Creek. Well, you know, maybe they can get away with that in a good year, but in a dry year with fire danger, that could be pretty problematic, that Trinidad would have no water towards the end of the dry season. So, and of course, traffic. Traffic's a big deal around there. You've got scenic drive, which can barely,
it's a scary
barely
road.
Stay intact as it is. And then adding more traffic in that vicinity seems foolhardy. But, you know, they've got plans, which are not part of this document, for a freeway interchange there. But that's not revealed in this document. So anyways, we sent our comments in, got them in on time. And to be clear, the Environmental Center is completely supportive of the Rancheria being self-sufficient and having more economic alternatives and opportunities. But we want to see it done in a way that fits the local environment and right. and doesn't either blow up in their faces or create a situation that nobody that lives around there or visits there is happy with.
Right.
Well, the next thing we want to report to you about was on several of these EcoNews reports, one that Tom Wheeler did, which I was part of, and our previous EcoNews Roundup report, we've talked about the sort of flim-flam Ponzi scheme that is this railroad, the Humboldt Eastern Railroad, as they're calling it. And it's gotten a lot of attention, you know, beyond just the environmental community, just regular people out there are like really concerned about it. And Eureka City Council member Austin Allison was concerned enough about it that he had it placed on the agenda of the Eureka City Council, asking the city to write a letter to Attorney General Becerra to investigate this $10 billion rail-to-port infrastructure plan for possible securities fraud.
Mm.
And, you know, part of the concern that people have is that there's elderly people in the community that are being approached about this and being dazzled with all kinds of promises of, you know, what this is going to do for the local economy and making it seem like all boats will rise with the tide here. And in reality, it sounds like only the initial investors in this will ever see any money out of it. Everybody else will probably wind up going, what happened?
Mm.
But anyways, for whatever reason, at the last minute, it got pulled off the agenda. I happened to go to that council meeting, and right at the beginning of the meeting, they said, oh yeah, by the way, we've pulled that item off the agenda. So according to the Lost Coast Outpost, the reason it got pulled off the agenda was because one of the principals and founders of the Humboldt Eastern Railroad, who's an attorney, threatened to sue. Oh. And so the city decided they wanted to take a look at their situation before moving forward with the letter. But they claim, the attorney claims, that he didn't explicitly threaten to sue the city. But, you know, that's the way the city, if they even smell the idea of litigation rising, then they react accordingly.
Sure.
So next up on the roundup is news about the offshore wind project. The Press Democrat did a good story about it. So for the first time, the federal government is opening the doors to offshore wind energy development on the California coast, including the area off Humboldt County and two others off of San Luis Obispo County. And of course, the oil-friendly Trump administration is soliciting proposals for wind projects in a trio of areas totaling more than 1,000 square miles in federal waters that start 3 miles from shore. In addition to the area off Eureka, the Interior Department is contemplating commercial wind power leases off a large swath of San Luis Obispo's coast west of San Simeon and Cambria, and the southern tip of Big Sur, and from Morro Bay south past the Santa Barbara County line. The Humboldt County-based Redwood Energy Authority has already filed for permission to develop a $500 million project for more than 20 miles off the coast near Eureka. The proposed project would have about 15 turbines, floating wind generators that are 700 feet tall. That's basically as tall as the towers on the Golden Gate Bridge. Hmm. They may grow larger as the technology improves. It would be the first floating offshore wind energy farm in North America, said Matthew Marshall, the executive director of the agency. Environmental groups, like the NEC, are in favor of clean energy, but are cautious because the impacts of floating turbines on the ocean, including our fisheries, is unknown. With average wind speeds of more than 20 miles an hour, the Humboldt County coast is considered an ideal location for wind power. And we have a world-class resource here, Matthew Marshall had said. The project would generate about 120 megawatts of power, enough for 70,000 households. The timeline for the project, which would cover about 75 square miles, envisions starting construction in 2023, turning it on by the end of 2024. The turbines would be located 24 to 33 miles offshore. Both of the leases off of the San Luis Obispo coast are in areas that have always been eyed by the tribes and the fisheries people as potential marine sanctuaries.
Oh.
So a little bit of controversy there.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Charter of Bodega Bay, a 40-year veteran of the fight against offshore oil drilling, said the wind turbines in that lease area would be visible from part of Big Sur coast due to its elevated vantage point. Wind power could be a good thing, but we don't know enough about the impacts on the ocean ecosystems, he said. The Trump administration, he said, seems allergic to doing science on this. Charter expressed concerns about whales getting tangled up in the cables that anchor the floating turbines to the ocean floor, as well as seabirds encountering the gigantic blades. The development of wind energy facilities in Eureka might ultimately pave the way to offshore drilling, he said, oil drilling. He said a step long feared by coastal advocates and public officials on the North Coast. Matthew Marshall said there would be a robust effort to assess Humboldt's project's impacts, noting there would need approval by local, state, and federal agencies. Noah Oppenheim, the executive director of Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, said, "The question is now, do we divvy up the ocean in a way that's equitable for fishermen? The assessment of the impact of floating wind farms operating is in a poor information environment. We don't know what the economic values of the fisheries that reside in the oceans are. Fishermen are huge fans of renewable energy," he said, drawing a contrast between fossil fuel extraction and wind. So we'll keep on that in our focus as the years go on here.
Right, yep.
So Baykeeper's working on a couple of projects that we don't have a whole lot of information that we can share with you, but just to let you know, they're on our radar. The asphalt plant at Big Lagoon on Mercer Fraser Green Diamond property. Mercer Fraser leases it. Green Diamond owns it. So that may wind up getting appealed to the Coastal Commission. The other project that both Baykeeper and Friends of the Eel River are working on is something called Sensi Valley, and it was approved recently by the Humboldt Planning Commission. It's a project, a cannabis processing project, that is just to the east of Dinsmore, California, along the Van Dusen River. It's located in the 100-year floodplain. That's the big concern that the Friends of the Eel have. And Baykeeper shares that concern. Plus, Baykeeper's also concerned about the contamination on the site. It is the old site of the Twin Harbor Stud Mill that closed at the end of the 70s. But during its tenure there, it is reputed to have used dip tanks, which is where they dipped the wood in penta and other chemical agents. And, of course, all that stuff spilled onto the ground in all those locations. Every place there was dip tanks, there's contamination. So there's every reason to believe that there's contamination on the site.
Right.
So the Friends of the Eel has appealed that to the Humboldt County Planning Commission, and we'll probably know more the next Eco News Roundup next month of how that is developing.
Okay. So up next, we received a notice from the City of Arcata of a public hearing on proposed 2018-2019 rate increases for universal garbage recycling rates. That public hearing is December 5th at 6 p.m. at Arcata City Hall. And essentially, the rates are to cover the costs of a new memorandum of agreement that the City of Arcata has signed with Recology. And the City of Arcata requires residents and business owners to have trash and recycling. So your rate will be increasing by, for residents, $3, depending on your service type. And apartments and commercial, it looks like almost $7 additional a month. And we spoke with Maggie Gaynor, one of our board members, about her thoughts of the rate increase. And she says it's a complex issue, yet it's very simple. In a nutshell, she has three bullet points. Number one, it's not China's fault. There's a number of countries that are turning away U.S. mixed and low-grade contaminated loads of material. Number two, behavioral change research like environmental psychology and social marketing indicate that concentrating on behavior change tools is more effective than public awareness programs. So people who are hitting their wallet will start making changes on their own. And with the rate increases, contracted haulers must do a better job at communicating directly with their customers. And so currently the system priority is no longer natural resource conservation. It's devolved into simply landfill diversion. So the goal, according to Maggie, is to help the contracted haulers haul as much as possible and as cost effectively as possible. So if you have concerns or would like to learn more about the rate increase, go to that public meeting on December 5th.
We also received notice from Six Rivers National Forest. They have a draft EA available on their aquatic restoration plan. So Six Rivers National Forest is seeking comments on the draft environmental assessment for their aquatic restoration program. This project exemplifies a collaborative vision shared amongst partners, tribes, and stakeholders dedicated to taking steps towards shaping the future to improve North Coast fishery habitats and other aquatic species and water quality. The proposed action would incrementally implement a suite of phased in-stream and nearby riparian habitat activities by reconnecting and enhancing spawning and rearing fishing habitats and improved habitat complexity alongside streams, ponds, and lakes. So you can make comments on this and get a copy of it online by going to Six Rivers National Forest website. You can mail your comments into them. You can hand deliver them at the office, or you can fax them. But they definitely will be accepting comments for 30 days following the publication of the comment period legal notice in the Times Standard, which I'm not sure if that's happened yet.
Oh, okay.
We got this notice. I would assume that it has, but I don't know for a fact. I looked and I couldn't find it, but that doesn't mean it's not there. But anyways, if you care about riparian habitat, you want to read this.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming up this Thursday, the NEC is sponsoring a wilderness movie night. That's actually tonight, October 25th, at the Arcata Playhouse, and we'll be screening three films, A Letter to Congress, Forever Wild, and Forget Shorter Showers. There will also be concessions, a raffle, and then discussions about the importance of wilderness with NEC staff and supporters, and especially a discussion on Huffman's wilderness bill. So doors open at 6 and the film starts at 6:30.
Well, we wanted to update you also. We reported about the huge judgment that was levied against Monsanto, $289 million, after finding that Roundup weed killer caused this gentleman, Duane Lee Johnson's, fatal illness. Of course, Monsanto appealed right away, and we'd said we'd report back to you how that appeal went. Well, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I think good news on the whole. The judge upheld the ruling and didn't grant their appeal, but did reduce the verdict down to $39 million, which is a big drop, but the verdict stands, and the appeal was not granted. So important news in the battle against this giant corporation.
Mm-hmm.
In other news of pesticide and chemical spraying, the city of Irvine about 3 years ago decided to drop using synthetic weed and pest killers, and they no longer use those. They use organic products such as corn gluten meal, oil from soybeans, lemongrass, rosemary, and other natural pest and weed control devices. They decided to create organic first policies. A number of other cities, Burbank, Corona, Laguna Beach, also in Southern California, have adopted similar types of policies restricting the use of chemicals. Unfortunately, in the federal government, the Farm Bill, H.R. 2, that was passed, includes a little-known provision that would preempt any local municipality from restricting pesticide use, which is something that actually the state of California has already done in the past. So now the feds are stepping in on this. So much for local control.
Right. Yeah.
But I think it was interesting that the city of Irvine made the statement that since kicking the synthetic pesticide habit has become something of a movement. Well, and that's true, except in the city of Eureka, which has decided to take a giant step backwards. Recently, the NEC participated in a candidates' night meeting with all the mayor and city council candidates of the city of Eureka. And the question that we asked them was about this proposed spraying project along the waterfront for an invasive reed that the city of Eureka has been battling with for about 20 years and not doing a very good job and only intermittently even paying attention to it. And what little attention they've paid to it has just made it worse. Like they sprayed it and burned it back in 2003 and it didn't do any good at all. It made it worse.
Sure.
So a number of the incumbents that were there at the candidates' night meeting came up to me afterwards and expressed shock and surprise. They said they knew nothing of this project. By the way, all candidates, right, left, center, incumbent, challenger, 100% were opposed to the project or any project like it. But here comes the project. The city of Eureka is moving forward with it. So I appeared at the Eureka City Council, asked the city council to direct its staff through the city manager to stop this project and then hold some actual public hearings or have a bigger discussion about it before they move forward. And they chose to ignore our input and they moved forward with the project. So I'm not sure what the incumbents that said that they were completely opposed to the project decided to do. Doesn't seem like they decided to do anything. I certainly haven't heard anything from any of them since I made that request of all of them in public. So as part of our usual EcoNews roundup, we always have a couple of climate change stories. This week we have two interesting ones. One's about a study that just was completed that shows the insects around the world are in crisis. According to a small but growing number of long-term studies, they're showing dramatic declines in invertebrate populations. The new report suggests the problem is more widespread than scientists realize. Huge numbers of bugs have been lost in a pristine national forest in Puerto Rico. The study found the forest's leading insect-eating animals have also gone missing. In 2014, an international team of biologists estimated that in the past 35 years, the abundance of invertebrates such as beetles and bees has decreased 45%. In places where long-term insect data is available, mainly in Europe, insect numbers are plummeting. The study showed last year a 76% decrease in flying insects in the past few decades in Germany's natural preserves. The latest report, published Monday in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, shows that this startling loss of insect abundance extends to the Americas. The study's authors implicate climate change in the loss of tropical invertebrates. They're calling this a wake-up call. Now, some of you may be thinking, well, less bugs, that sounds good to me, but they're all part of the ecosystem and critical to all of our survival, mm-hmm. particularly when it comes to species like bees that are responsible for pollinating most of the food plants that we grow.
Right.
So as a solution to this, the Portland-based Xerces Society, I guess I'm pronouncing that right, is X-E-R-C-E-S, Society, a nonprofit environmental group that promotes insect conservation, recommends planting a garden with native plants that flower throughout the year. So that's something we can all do. It's something the NEC has been preaching for a long time anyway, and one of our member groups, Native Plant Society, is also at the forefront of encouraging people to plant native plants. So here's yet another reason to have some beautiful native plants, flowering native plants in your garden, around your house, in your yard, wherever. Mm-hmm. You know, be Johnny Appleseed. Start planting them everywhere you can, because the more that we have, the more our beneficial insects will be able to survive. And in another story, which I thought might get the attention of people that normally don't pay much attention to climate science and climate change, is a report from scientists who say that climate change is going to cost beer drinkers severely in the near future.
What?
Yes. Well, first it was because there was too much rain, and ill-timed storm thrashed the barley fields in Montana, which grows over a fifth of the country's barley crop.
Wow.
That was the first thing that happened. It ruined the golden fields of barley. But a few years later, the dry heat wave shriveled the grains and bowed over the plants, resulting in shortages, and the price shot up of high quality barley. The price went through the roof, squeezing both the farmers and their key customers, beer brewers. So as this trend, what this report is talking about, is this is a trend, and they're seeing this sort of worldwide, that barley and even hops, the study talks about even hops being affected by these quick shocks to the climate, where it goes from one extreme to the other. Both the barley crop and the hops crops are very susceptible to these sudden changes. Either too much rain, not enough rain, too much heat, or too cold. It affects these crops. And so all you guys sitting at home watching the baseball World Series here, drinking beers and whatnot, think about that. So climate change is going to even affect your supply of beer.
Right.
They're guessing that a six-pack of beer in Ireland, which they thought was the country that would be affected the most dramatically, will be $19 a six-pack.
Wow, that's an expensive beer.
So, time to pay attention to climate change, beer drinkers.
Yeah. Well, this has been the Eco News Report with Bella Waters and Larry Glass, and we've been your hosts for the past half hour. You can find more information about the issues we've discussed on the NEC website at www.yournec.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the Public Affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 707-826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 right here on KHSU for the next Eco News Report.